Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
This Sunday, don't miss your chance to win $25,000 of Clint Bowyer's money during the NASCAR Cup Series Dirt Race at historic Bristol Motor Speedway. Download the FoxBet Super 6 app and pick six outcomes in Clint's Stage 2 contest for your shot at $25,000. It's completely free to play.
One of the things about the NFL that's always been remarkable is that half of the league is undrafted. Everybody's got a different journey to the NFL. Now, Alvin Kamara has played 5 years in the NFL for the Saints. He's been a Pro Bowler four of them. Last year, he led the NFL in scrimmage yards, so he's an elite player. But even his path was interesting. He went to Alabama, and then he got hurt, and then he had to transfer. He got in the doghouse maybe a little, goes to a junior college. Then he goes to Tennessee. And so he was a little under the radar when the Saints picked him up, and he has been nothing but a star in the NFL. And he is now joining us live. You know, Alvin, you go back and look. When you were at Bama, you got hurt, and they had a bunch of running backs, and you couldn't kind of break through. And then you go to a junior college, Alvin. Was there ever a moment for you that you doubted yourself and you thought, damn, this thing ain't going to work out for me?
I wouldn't say it was a moment of doubt. I would just say it was a moment of uncertainty. It was like, man, I go from Alabama to a junior college, and it's like, you know, you don't know. Basically, when that moment's going to come where, you know, you get back to that elite level of being D1 or, you know, just being at a point to where you can see your dreams. Like at a JUCO, I kind of lost focus or lost sight of my dreams for a little bit. But, you know, I just kind of made it a point of, you know, the utmost like interest to stay focused and go there and do exactly what I got to do. And that's get back to where I know I should be at. And that's, you know, at a D1 level.
Well, you went to Tennessee, and then you were very, very profoundly impactful there, and then you go to the NFL. It's interesting. September, you signed a big extension, a lot of money, and you deserved every penny of it. You're a star running back. But running backs, as you know, Alvin, everybody's always like, oh, watch out. Don't pay a running back. Oh, watch out. When you hear that before you got your contract, what do you think?
Man, I'm like, I guess I just got to be the running back that gets paid, you know, to prove that the running backs deserve to get paid. You know, I mean, that's always been an issue in our league. You know, people just tend to feel that running backs, you know, they can get them anywhere, you know, and I don't think that's the case. You know, I mean, we see it right now in our league with the talent that we have at the running back position. I mean, it's guys that are transcending the game. You know, you got the Christian McCaffreys, you got Dalvin Cooks, Derrick Henry's that are doing amazing things week in and week out, and I mean, consistently every year. So, I mean, I think at our position, we deserve to get paid. I mean, I hope I did our group justice, you know, by, you know, not only signing a big deal, but proving that, you know, it was worth, you know, the Saints giving me that deal.
Yeah, well, it is. They're not the same team without you because you can also catch the ball, which is huge, and not all backs can do that. So Drew Brees just retired, and it's funny. Joey and I were talking about this. Last couple of years, we've seen multiple teammates get very emotional. Jameis Winston cried about him, offensive lineman. And, you know, leadership, Alvin's a hard thing to describe. Like, what is leadership? And I don't know what leadership is, but Drew did connect with guys, like, at a different level. Like, when you got to New Orleans, Alvin, when did you notice it, just kind of Drew and his impact on guys?
Man, I think it was right when I got there in May. I think 2 days being in New Orleans, I went out with the vet guys to, you know, catch some balls. And, you know, obviously Drew was out there. And, I mean, I've watched Drew Brees play, obviously. Never met him. So this is my first time meeting Drew. He's about to throw me the ball. And I'm like, dang, I'm out here with Drew Brees. And these dudes like, all right. And he's like, Alvin, what's up? He's like, hey, have you ever run a whatever route it was? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, all right, come on, line up, run this. I run it. He's like, yeah, that's good. He was like, but next time, you know, just break it down a little bit earlier and, you know, give me your eyes. I'm like, all right, cool. And I'm like, dang, this is Drew Brees. He just chilling, like, you know, he hasn't won a Super Bowl and he hasn't been in the league for X amount of years. And, you know, from that moment, I mean, he's been in that moment, how helpful he was. I mean, that was throughout, you know, my whole 4 years being in New Orleans. I mean, I think Drew, I say this all the time, Drew is probably the reason that I was able to have the success that I've had. I mean, like leadership, you say you don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know what it is either, but if I could define it, it would be Drew Brees. Just being able to relate to the guys on the team and being able to not only just be a teacher, but a mentor and you know, just I think he's just a light, you know what I'm saying? He inspired everybody around him, not only by the way he played, but the way he prepared, the way he carried himself. I mean, you know, he's retired now, and somebody asked me the other day, they was like, why haven't you commented on Drew retiring? And I'm like, I texted him privately, you know, because, I mean, I had a lot to say, and I'm not really into the social media thing of where, oh, my gosh, me post a picture of me and Drew and try to describe my feelings in 100 words. Like, you know, I text him and, you know, told him what he meant to me. And, I mean, I guess this is my first time commenting on it, man. I mean, he's an amazing dude, and, you know, obviously, I mean, you know this day is coming, but when it comes, you're like, dang, you know, I wish he didn't retire, but Drew been playing my whole life, damn near, so, I mean, amazing career, amazing person. I mean, I'm just excited to see what he does next, because, I mean, as good as he is a football player, he's a better human, and I know he got some up his sleeve.
It's interesting. I kind of think Jameis Winston's going to win the quarterback battle. It's nothing against Taysom, but I think Jameis, I think the second year with Sean Payton's system, I think Jameis is talented. I just think he makes too many mistakes, and I think Sean's going to clean a lot of that stuff up. And it is now you go into the year next year, you just want the best quarterback. How do you look at the quarterback's position right now for the Saints?
Man, we got two guys. We got Jameis and Taysom on the roster. Obviously, you guys seen what Taysom can do. Jameis, we've seen Jameis in Tampa, what he can do. Like you said, Carlin just alluded to, you know, just the decision-making with Jameis. And, I mean, like you said, year two with Sean Payton. I mean, he's a mastermind, I think. I think Sean's a real quarterback whisperer. I mean, he's an offensive mega mind, and he knows how to get – the best out of players. I mean, whether it be a quarterback, a receiver, anybody. So I think it's a thing where Jameis respects Sean's opinion. Sean, I think, respects Jameis as an athlete and as a man, you know. I mean, I think he understands who Jameis is. Jameis understands who he is as a player and as a person. And, I mean, that's one thing that's huge when you – I mean, especially at a quarterback position. I mean, it's so much about respect and being able to command the troops.
Yeah.
And I think Jameis has those qualities. Taysom also has those qualities. But if we just talking about Jameis right now, I think, you know, like you said, with it being his second year in the program, second year being around the guys, second year being around Sean and you know, learning the offense, you know, he has a shot. He can go as far as he wants to go. We just, I mean, everybody has to rally around him.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Alvin. A running back is, the game is not as violent as it used to be. You can't hit quarterbacks. You can't hit receivers. The one position that you can still hit is running back. So when a season ends, do you just, like, get away from working out? Like, do you just say, my body got to heal? Like, how long do you just take off?
Oh, yeah, I disappear. You know, it's a long season for any position. You know, but obviously, I mean, I get hit every play, whether I'm pass protecting, running the ball, whether it's a run fake, somebody hitting me thinking I got the ball. So, you know, I take a good amount of time just to let my body, you know, just return to like natural state. You know, a lot of guys, some guys go right back to training after the season, like, oh, I got to get better. I'm like, yeah, I got to get better, but my body has to get better before I can get better. So, you know, I take a good amount of time off. Like, I'm about to ramp it back up here. Probably in the next couple of days and you know, lock back in and start getting ready.
What a pleasure. 5 years in the NFL, 4 as a Pro Bowler, led the NFL in scrimmage yards, got a big paycheck. The Saints know what they're doing, and they backed up the truck. By the way, Alvin's partnering, this is important, with Greenwood. It's a digital banking platform for Black and Latino business owners and individuals. Today, Greenwood got a $30 million investment from some of the biggest banks in America. So you're doing things in your community. Good for you, Alvin. Tell me about Greenwood.
Yeah. Colin, you, I got to correct you. We just closed Series A funding, and we closed at $40 million. So that's the largest in the history of fintech, which is financial tech. And like you said, we got some of the biggest banks invested. We got Bank of America. We got PNC, JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, you know, MasterCard, and all these big juggernauts in banking, you know, they're investing in this platform that we created to basically just, you know, close the the wealth gap, you know. Like you said, it's African-American and Latino Latino focus, minority focus, but, you know, it's going to be a platform for everybody, you know, just to wake people up to financial literacy and give minorities and everyone banking options, you know, because I mean, I think, and I'm just speaking for me, my community and the Black community, there's not enough knowledge about banking and, you know, being able to get loans and, you know, how to save your money and spend your money wisely. So, I mean, this is going to be huge, huge, huge. And I'm just excited to be a part of it.
Alvin, you're a good dude. You're a great player. And, love watching you play. Absolutely love it. And I have more than a few friends that have you on their fantasy team. You're on basically everybody's fantasy team if they can get
you.
Yeah,
man.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
No doubt. Appreciate you, Carl.
All right. Good stuff, Alvin Kamara. Yeah, he's great route. Goes to Alabama, gets hurt, and then they have so many running backs, can't break through. A little bit of a doghouse with Nick Saban. Has to go to junior college. Now a junior college, goes to Tennessee, and they're losing a lot of games. And everybody forgets about Alvin Kamara, who was a great high school player. And boom, again, great fit. He goes to a veteran quarterback and a smart head coach that understand his talents, know how to use him. It's not just quarterbacks who need to land in the right spot. Like Alvin Kamara with Adam Gase would not be Alvin Kamara with Sean Payton. Was that a cheap shot? Oh, no. But I mean,
we're just taking shots at Adam Gase for no reason now.
No, just Adam Gase slander all
the
time.
That Christmas Day game against the Vikings was unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman. And I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, the Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
What's the difference between an AMG skeptic and an AMG believer? A split second, all it takes. Go to MBUSA.com/AMG. Mercedes AMG driving performance. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
No new NBA trade deadline updates yet, but we are watching because there's some Kyle Lowry, Dennis Schroeder stuff, Tyler Hero stuff floating out there. Nothing is done yet, but if it comes up in the next couple minutes, I'll let you know. So Richard Sherman is still on the free agent market, and the Seahawks have emerged as a potential landing spot for him. Seattle is open to bringing him back, but according to Pro Football Talk, the Seahawks are allowing these rumors to be out there as mainly as a jab towards Russell Wilson.
Oh, boy.
So they believe the Seahawks are unlikely to sign him and are also using the situation as a reminder to the team that they weeded out players like Sherman who were previously unhappy with the front office's preferential treatment of Wilson. Such a weird dynamic with the Seahawks because originally the Seahawks felt like there was an energy around the Seahawks that Wilson was getting too much favoritism. And then now we're flash forward 2021, they're like overcorrecting and not listening to Russell Wilson. Well, they're, as of the past week, they're having better communication, but like that's why this is an issue to begin with. Like, what is the communication breakdown there? Because this was a thing that everyone felt like Pete Carroll was just favoring Russell Wilson over the rest of the team.
It is.
Isn't it odd?
It is odd.
Because it completely flipped. Because this used to be the narrative. Like, Russell Wilson, everything is about Russell Wilson. It leans too far.
Now they're jabbing each other in the media.
Yeah. It's a very strange dynamic in Seattle. I'm comforted by the fact that they are making some moves. And that it seems like the communication between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson is getting better. Although the requests that Russell Wilson had weren't really outrageous. He's on pace to be sacked more than any quarterback in the history of the NFL. So, you know, wanting a little bit of help on the offensive line shouldn't really be that dramatic. And the argument that some of these sacks are brought on by the way that he plays, I think, is a little exaggerated. Like, Russell Wilson is the best player on the team. So sometimes he has to make plays. To your point, if you have a great voice, you want to sing all the time. Right. Like, this is his talent.
Right.
It's just a weird dynamic in Seattle. So T.Y. Hilton is staying in Indy. The receiver agreed to a one-year deal worth $10 million with $8 million guaranteed. He spent his entire nine-year career with the Colts and recorded at least 1,000 receiving yards in five different seasons. But he's battled some injuries recently, missing nine games in the last three seasons. He tweeted after the news, "One thing I know about this city is that they love me and I love them. I listen to all the songs. I read all the tweets. I will cherish this forever. It's only right I finished what I started. Hashtag TY is home."
I still think they need Pittman was great. Paris Campbell, we don't know. T.Y. Hilton gets banged up, but he's great. I still think this team is one more dependable receiver away.
I feel like the Colts are the team with the most pressure going into next season.
Well, the Wentz stuff, yeah.
Like, this is the team that should take a significant, and they were good last year, but they should take a significant step up in this new season. So the Packers are bringing back veteran tight end Mercedes Lewis. He agreed to a two-year deal worth $8 million. He set it into his 16th season in the NFL and has been in Green Bay since 2018. Last season, he was used mainly as a blocking tight end.
He's a very good blocking tight end.
Catching only 10 passes for 107 yards with three touchdowns. But I'm glad that they are bringing him back. He's obviously a huge part of this locker room as well. And as I just mentioned, a good blocking tight end and can make plays as well. But, you know, again, with the Packers, it still feels like they haven't really been as aggressive as
They've got a catching tight end and they got a blocking tight end.
Well, not at the tight end position, just overall.
Yeah.
They're another team that I can't understand what the communication breakdown is.
Just take care of Aaron Rodgers. Make him happy. It doesn't seem that difficult.
You would think so, but I think sometimes, obviously, egos play a big role in these situations, but it's also trying in some ways to be smarter than the room. Like, when it comes to Green Bay, they've always had a starting quarterback. Like, they've always had a Hall of Fame quarterback for as long as I've been alive.
Yeah.
And they have two Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Like, you're always good. You're always in the conversation, but you're never that next step.
Right.
So obviously there needs to be some tweaking there.
Some tweaking.
Unless you're just comfortable being
good.
Really good.
Yeah, some people are. We are not.
No, we are excellence.
By the way, I just saw this. Per Woj, Hawks trade Rondo to the Clippers for Lou Williams. So that's a thing. Yeah. Rondo was good in the playoff. He was good in the bubble.
Yes.
He kind of takes the regular season off, but he was good in the bubble.
Well, he's one of those players at this point in his career that can play a massive role in the locker room, can be the guy when the stars are out to keep everything together. So that's a good move.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
By the way,
news.
Aaron Gordon to the Denver Nuggets is interesting. He's a forward. He was a top five pick out of Arizona. He's a great player, losing a lot, got tired of the organization, demanded a trade. That's an interesting move. Aaron Gordon has real talent. He joins the Joker and Jamal Murray and Michael Porter. I may just put some money on Denver. Denver's interesting. That's Aaron Gordon to Denver. That is a hell of a starting lineup. That is a Aaron Gordon can play. Guys disappear in Orlando. That dude can play.
Orlando is down to the bolts now.
Yeah. Dick Stockton, legend, 55 years, retired today. On his own, just wanted to say 5-5 is a good number. One of the great all-time broadcasters next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Marion, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Marion. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, the Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Dick Stockton is called more games on American television sports broadcasting than any broadcaster ever. More than Kurt Gowdy, more than Al Michaels, more than Jim Nance, more than Brent Musburger, baseball, hockey. He was kind of the voice, the national voice of Magic and Larry Bird coming into the league. And Dick Stockton, after 55 years of wonderful broadcasting, called our boss today or yesterday and said, I'm done. It's a good round number. I'm done. He is joining us now live. So the great part of your, and I remember watching this, so you're a kid. 1975, you're a kid broadcaster, and you're calling the Red Sox and the Reds. And it's probably the most famous game you've ever done. At the time, did you have any sense you were part of American sports history?
No, none whatsoever. In fact, a lot of the great moments in sports, Colin, only become famous over the test of time. The minute they happen, no one says, well, that's going to go down in history. That's not the case. It was a home run, a dramatic one, that sent the World Series to Game 7.
Yeah, it was Carlton Fisk hitting it, Pat Darcy. This was the legendary Big Red Machine. And, you know, I remember the NBA was a little down, Dick, and then here came Magic and here came Bird. And the league was not as popular as it was with Shaq and Kobe or Michael Jordan. And when you were doing Magic and Bird, you were kind of the soundtrack for a lot of us. You know, it's interesting. Did you, when they were young and you started doing it, did you think they would get as popular and last as long as they did?
Yes, I did. And I think the key to the NBA's resurgence was when CBS decided to put on one game a month because the game of the week was not working ratings-wise. People weren't talking about the sport that much. And when they said, we're going to do one game a month, and then came the emergence of Julius Erving and Larry Bird in the Eastern Conference and Magic. And then people said, wait a second, you mean I can't get to see these guys for another month? And I think what it was the case of, you know, the people not getting what they wanted. They demanded more, and the supply and demand was the real story there. And then it all worked out great.
By the way, you mentored Troy Aikman very early on. And go back to your first couple games with Troy. Troy laughs about it now, how nervous he was and how different. But go back to the first couple Troy Aikman games. What do you remember?
Well, what I remember is, you know, and this is one of the great thrills that I've had in my career, Colin, is to break in broadcasters. And, you know, the athletes come and go, but the announcers come in from a great coaching and playing career. And they come in there in a new field. And so they are a little bit apprehensive because they don't know whether they'll be successful or not. And they don't know how this whole broadcasting thing happens. And so when Troy started, I did with him. And believe me, he would have been a great success whether I'd been there or not. But what I did with him was what I do with everyone. I say, look, don't worry about me. It's not about whether you're talking too much or pleasing me or infringing on my game. I don't count. You count because you're the expert. People want to hear what the expert says. I do the who and the what in the game. You do the why and the how. I can't do the why and the how. So what you say is what really counts, and you're going to have all the room you want. Don't act like you're a broadcaster. Just talk football. You know the game that you're seeing down on the field. And Troy kind of grasped it pretty early. And, you know, all of the guys I've worked with have been terrific, but Troy kind of got it.
Yeah. By the way, you wanted to be a sports writer. So did I. And then I couldn't write. So I had to be I had to become a broadcaster. Do you remember your first game ever?
Yes. My first broadcast of a game ever was in Pittsburgh. I was the sports director at KDKA, and they had the package of the Pittsburgh Steelers preseason games. Now, in those days, the Steelers were lucky to win three games a year. They were not the great teams that they became. It was a little while before Chuck Knoll was hired as the head coach. And so I did the first preseason game as sports director in St. Louis. It was the Cardinal Glennon annual game at Busch Stadium between the Cardinals and the Steelers. And I remember I was so nervous when the game got underway. The game was going so fast for me. I mean, I wanted to put my hands out and reach out and say, please stop, because I couldn't keep up with who had the ball, who made the tackle, what down, what yardage, what the clock was going on. It was crazy. And later in the year, I met Ray Scott because we were doing a game in Green Bay. And Ray said, you know, when Star gets the ball, I see Dowler 40 yards down the field. I say, you what? you see him downfield? How do you see him downfield? I said, I'm lucky if I just see what's going on in the line of scrimmage. And he says, and I do it. And I have to tell you that through sheer experience and all the years, today, all the games that I do are in slow motion.
Wow. That's baseball hitters often say that. Like when the game slows down, quarterbacks say that. When the game slows down, Russell right. Wilson once said, about year three, the game slowed down. I was a better quarterback. Now, have you had an NFL game that was most memorable to you?
Yes, I did the Super Bowl for 6 years on international television. So obviously you talk about the great, you know, giant victory over the Patriots, David Tyree's catch, so on and so forth. And the first one I did was the Patriots upset over the Rams in New Orleans, which was their first Super Bowl. But for Fox, I would say the most exciting game I did was a double overtime game between the Carolina Panthers and the St. Louis Rams. That was the Rams were unstoppable, especially on their own turf in St. Louis. And the Panthers won on a dramatic pass from Jake Delhomme to Steve Smith in the second overtime to win the game. It was really dramatic and a shocker.
You know, do you have a theory on broadcasting? Like when you talk to young broadcasters, do you have sort of a philosophy of play-by-play?
I do, and my philosophy is less is more. And I believe that nothing is better than the pictures and the sounds from the field. In football, we hear the quarterback yelling the signals, and sometimes you hear the middle linebacker, you know, in answer to that. And the sounds on the field are the greatest, and the pictures are great, and the crowd. And so if you let that play, then you can't go wrong. Too many times people want to add words, and the words are not going to be sufficient to the drama on the field. I mean, even in a big baseball game, you know, the sport that you loved and I loved too, first before anything, you know, you have the bases loaded and two out in the bottom of the eighth inning and the tying runs at third base and the pitcher's on the mound peering in. What are you going to say? They see the count and then it's strike three. He comes off the field. The crowd is going wild. If it's the home pitcher, what else do you need to say? And you go to commercial.
By the way, I want to, and to that point, here is Dick as a young broadcaster. He figured it out very early. Here's the most famous home run to me on video. This is Carlton Fisk, and listen to Dick Stockton.
There it goes, a long drive. If it stays fair, home run. We will have a seventh game in this 1975 World Series. Carlton Fisk becomes the first player in the series to hit one over the wall into the net. Red Sox win it 7-6 in 12 innings. A lot of body English for Carlton Fisk. Watch him.
How many steps does he take? One. He waits to see it. Get over.
He knew it. There it is.
Yeah, I remember, you know, sitting on my couch at home watching that.
Colin, I want to tell you, in looking at that highlight again, they edited the audio.
That's right.
Because when he hit the home run, and I said, if it stays fair, home run, I did not utter another word until he entered the dugout, mobbed by his teammates. And that's when I said, there will be a seventh game for this World Series. So it was about 40-some-odd seconds. What was better than showing him riding the bases and the crowd going crazy?
Yeah, you did actually. Our guys edited it. It was 41 seconds of Fenway crowd noise. By the way, I always think it's funny. The audience always thinks you hate their team. Joe Buck always said, he goes, everybody thinks we hate your team. And I always tell everybody, these guys just don't want bad games. They just want close games. They don't want to be there for 4 hours watching a blowout.
That's such a great point. Great point. Because when we did the Lakers and the Celtics, maybe it was different for Tommy Heinsohn, but whenever we were in Los Angeles, they said, you are Celtic fans. And when we were in Boston, they said, you're rooting for the Lakers. And the reason why is because if a team would open up a 15-point lead and the Celtics were leading the Lakers by 15, they'd come to us on camera and we say, what do the Lakers need to do to get back in the game? And Boston fans say, well, we don't care. We don't want them to get back into the game.
A legendary career, Dick Stockton, 55 brilliant years. Thank you so much for joining us today. Just enjoyed your work, and you're a credit to the profession. Thank you so much, Dick.
Colin, thank you for having me on.
Dick Stockton, who's carved out quite a life, more than any broadcaster ever. 1500 NFL, baseball, hockey. He was a lot of NBA stuff. I'm always amazed by broadcasters who can do multiple sports. I used to work with a guy, Mike Tirico, was like, he could do ping pong. Like, just Dick could do everything.
They're geniuses.
Like, they just, if you were literally two kids running up the street, they could call it. It's like, that to me is always just an unbelievable skill. Endless hot water, spa-like comfort, tanklessmadesimple.com, Navien water heaters, more efficient. All right, good stuff today. We will see you tomorrow. Fun Thursday show in LA. It's The Herd.